after wishing everyone a Chodesh Tov. Now, we probably have another, I would say, I'm guessing another week or two to finish up here in the third parak of Ksubis, that's Elul Naris, and then Mitzvah Shem will start something new. I'm seriously considering Bava Metzia as our new limud, but you'll have to give me a little more time because I have to see, number one, if I can get the agreement of my boys in the Amic Learning Center and get them on board for Bava Metzia. And secondly, I want to make sure I have the literature that I need, you know, to study Bava Metzia. I mean, Bava Metzia is a world unto itself. I don't have to tell you that.
Which Masechet isn't?
Yeah, but Bava Metzia.
There's a lot of literature.
Oh my gosh. There's just so much. So let's just see what progress we can make here. We're on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis. No, I don't think we even got to Lamed Ches Amud Beis.
According to my mark, we're on Amud Aleph a little bit after the Mishnah.
Okay, great. So we probably would be well advised to review the Mishnah. So the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph records a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva. So do you have the place on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph? See if you have the, make sure you have the place. The Mishnah there. See if you can find it.
There's a Mishnah.
Okay then?
Yeah.
Now, here's the issue. Normally, in the case of a Nara, which is a girl between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half, just that half a year period, she is in the reshus of her father, which means that any monies that come into her possession automatically accrue to the father. He can marry her off, and if he marries her off at that age, he receives the Kesef Kiddushin and he pockets it. That's his. It goes right into his bank account. In our context, we're talking about a Nara that he married off, but only with Erusin, only the first stage of marriage, right? Jewish marriage has two stages, the first stage of which is Erusin, and then 12 months later, Nisuin would take place. Now, during that 12-month period, she's an Eishasish, she's completely married. And if someone were to have a relationship with her, he'd be chayv nisa. That would be a capital crime. But the situation that our Mishnah addresses is where the husband, during this 12-month period of time, decided to divorce his wife. And now the issue is, once the father already exercised his rights to marry off his daughter, does that mean that he's used up, you know, he's exhausted his bilis, his ownership, his rights? He only gets a one shot, you know, he gets a one shot at it. That's it. You know, he used up his card, his joker card, and he married her off. And now she gets divorced. She's now in her own reshus. Even though, again, she's still a Nara. She's still between that age of 12 and 12 and a half. So you would think, as long as she's in that age, she goes back to her father's reshus. And Rabbi Akiva, for one, is going to say no. She's already independent of the father. Now, what is Rabbi Akiva? What's the thrust of Rabbi Akiva's statement as far as our chapter in Ksuvos is concerned? So that's obviously the case of Ones Umefata. So let's take the case of Ones, right? So in the case of Ones, where Nebuchadnezzar rapes a girl of 12 years old, she's between that age of 12 and 12 and a half, so the Torah says, in Parshas Ki Tetzeh, the Torah tells us that the Ma'anes who raped her has to pay, in addition to other payments, that we're already scholars, so we know there are other payments, but in addition to those other payments, he has to pay a penalty, which is a pretty severe penalty, of 50 shekel. Again, the shekel then was worth a lot more than it is today. Kesef. So to whom does that money to whom does that money get paid? So Rabbi Kiva says the following, that in this case, although she's a Nara, and the general rule is that as long as she's a Nara, she's in the Rishus of her father. In this case, she leaves the Rishus of her father, she collects the Knas, this penalty of 50 kesef, pockets it and puts it in her bank account, simply because the father exercised his rights to marry her off on one occasion, and after marrying her off, she got divorced. Now why is it that the scenario addressed here by Rabbi Akiva must be, by definition, that she was divorced, that she received a get? Because if she didn't receive a get before the onus, then what would that be? Do you follow what I'm saying? Why is it that in the sequence of events, you know, time T1, time T2, time T3, she became a Nara, the father married her off, be Erisin, right, the first stage of marriage, and then there was a get, and the husband divorced his wife, and then finally we get to the moment of rape, to the moment of onus. Why does it have to...
It says, Asher lo rasa. It says,
okay, well, again, that's going to be Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, but I'm focused now on Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva doesn't have Asher lo rasa. Okay. He uses that for Gzeirah Shava. That's something. Sorry. But what I'm asking you is a different question. What I'm asking you is, why in the sequence of the scenario of our Mishnah must it be that wedged between the Erisin and the Onus was a get, was a Gerishin?
Well,
because otherwise, what principle would kick in? John, can you help me out here? If there was no get...
Oh, Kim
Levi the Rabbi. Okay, that's the subject of this entire parak that we've been spending, what, how many months on?
I didn't sleep last night, sorry.
Oh, okay, good. Then you're off the hook. It's all right. Some people, even after they sleep, they don't know the answers to my questions, but it's okay. Anyway, so today is Rosh Chodesh El, and the Meretz Hashem, we're entering into a very, very special period of time. You know, since we're talking about marrying off a young girl, so, you know, the Gemara says in the first Perek of Ksubis that after the father in this case gives over his daughter for Erisin, then when it gets closer and closer to the time of marriage, the time of the chuppah, the nesuin, we notify the girl that she should get ready for the marriage. So they give her how many days? Anybody know? It's a Gemara in the first Perek of Ksubis. We didn't learn.
Someone mentioned yesterday 30 days.
Excellent, 30 days, right. It's a 30-day period. Nosin la shloshim yom. Now yesterday was the first day of Rosh Chodesh El. So it means that El is now made up of one day, which is the first day Rosh Chodesh, and then from Rosh Chodesh till the end of El is another 29 days, and it's all told 30 days. So if you consider Rosh Chodesh El as the first day of El, El becomes a 30-day period. And according to the Avudraham, and it's all based on earlier sources, El is the nutrikin for Ani Lidodi Vidodi Li. So it's all about marriage between the Raya and the Dod of Shir HaShirim. So we hope in Yirtzeh Hashem that now we're embarking upon this special period of time of marriage, and we're building up to the crescendo of Rosh Hashanah, Yirtzeh Hashem. Now, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili reads the parsha of Ones, and there it says Asher lo orasa. When the Torah describes the girl who was raped, it describes the girl who was not married. And he's the first opinion here in our Mishnah. So let's read the Mishnah. It says, Nara shenis arsa venis garsha, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili omer, ein lo knas. There's no money at all. There's no penalty. That means the Ma'anis is off the hook. And it's irrelevant to the question that Rabbi Akiva is going to address. Who gets the money? There is no money to be had. Because that penalty, just like it's conditional on the fact that she's a Nara, as we said before, and it's also conditional on the fact that she is a Besula, and she's never been married before, it's also conditional on the fact that there was no Erisin, because the Torah says, Isha Asher Lo Orasa. So Rabbi Yosef Gluni says that in a case of a rape situation where she was already married, even though she's still a Besula, she never had an intimate relationship, because that intimate relationship is only going to take place 12 months after the Erisin, at the time of the Nisuin, nevertheless she's excluded from Knas, and there's no payment of Knas. because the Torah added this condition, she's got to be number one a Nara, number two a Basula, number three a Sherlo Orasa, that she was never married off. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva disagrees, Yesh la Knas, there is a Knas, even in the case where she was married off. But Knas Ali Atzma, but she collects the Knas herself, instead of what normally would be the father's rights to collect the Knas. Here, since the father married her off, he forfeits his rights to collect the Knas, and the Knas goes directly into her bank account. And Rav Moshe, let me just ask you a side question here. It's a quiz question. What happens if she would die? Nebuch. Where would that knas go?
To her father, who inherits
it. No, it would go to her son. The question is, could she have a son? Yeah. Is it feasible for a girl of 12 to have a child? I mean, that's going to be a major sugya over here. But if you would assume, leaving out biology for a moment, that a 12-year-old girl could somehow conceive and give birth to a child, then that child would inherit the knas according to Rabbi Akiva. Interesting. Because if a person dies and he leaves behind him a father and a son, then the son comes first in the Seder HaYerusha.
Yeah, I forgot about that point.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. And you may accuse me of coming up with some wild case, but the Gemara is actually going to address this case. Okay. So now let's take a look at the Gemara. My taima de Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Why is it that in the case of Nisarsa, once there was Eris and Rabbi Yossi Aglili says the Knas is out, completely out. There's no Knas. And the Gemara answers, Omar Kra, the Torah says in the Parsha of Ones, Asher lo orasa, a girl who was never married. Ha orasa, implying that if she was married, ain lo Knas, she's not included. So again, we have three boxes that have to be checked off here in order to be Knas. Number one, she has to be a Nara. Number two, she has to be a Basula. And number three, she has to be Asher lo orasa. So says Rabbi Yossi Aglili, she may very well be a Nara, she might even be a Basula, but she's not Asher lo orasa because she's already been married off. And that excludes her from Knas.
Grammatically, does the word orasa mean either betrothed now or betrothed sometime in the past, or not necessarily?
Sometime in the past, Asher lo orasa. She was never married in the past, right? Ha orasa, had she been married in the past, ain lo knas. That's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So what's Rabbi Akiva going to do with this pasuk? Asher lo orasa. It's pretty explicit here. The Torah is very outspoken about the fact that she has to be a girl who you could describe as Asher lo orasa. So the Gemara says, V'Rabbi Akiva, what does he do with Asher lo orasa? He says Asher lo orasa is a condition on the father's rights to collect the knas. La via. If she was never married, then the knas goes to whom? To the father. Ha orasa. But if she was already married, then li atzma. Then she collects the knas herself. So we now have three categories. We have one category of a case where the father collects the knas. We have another polar extreme case where there's no knas. And in the middle, we have a case where there is a knas, but she doesn't. But the father doesn't collect the knas, and instead she collects the knas. So let's go over the three cases. The first category would be a category where the father collects the knas. That's a classic Nara, who is number one, between the age of 12 and 12 and a half. Number two, she's a basula, she's never been married. And number three, let's take a case which even Rabbi Yossi Aglili would agree that the father collects the knas. Asher lo orasa, she was never married off. Now let's go to the other extreme. What are the scenarios in which there is no knas, period. Not to him and not to her. Number one, she's not a Nara, which would mean she's younger than 12 years old. Number two, she's older than 12 and a half. Then we go on to the case of Basula. Let's say a woman was already, she already had a relationship, right? She's already had a relationship, so she's not a Basula. No Knas. And number three, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, if she was married off, which means that even though she's still a Nara, number two, she's still a Basula, But number three, since she was married off, she cannot be described as Asher Lo Oros, and she's excluded. The whole enterprise of Knas is completely down the drain. Now we said that there's a middle category where there is Knas, but instead of the father collecting the Knas, she herself, the Nara, collects the Knas. That's the case, according to Rabbi Akiva, which in our mission is called Nisarsa Venisgarsha. She was married off, she received her get, then there was an ones, and she collects her own Knas. Now again, I'm going to quiz you, gentlemen, because we've been learning this for a while, and I hope you'll give me the right answer. In what other situation does she collect the Knas instead of him, instead of the father? Starts with the bays, ends with the tough. Bogeris, okay. Just want to make sure that you have that. The Bogeris. So Bogeris is a girl who's 12 and a half, plus, and once she reaches her half birthday, between 12 and 13, she collects the Knas herself. Now it's interesting, when I say that a Bogeris collects the Knas herself, she pockets the Knas, yesh lachkar, you know, you can wonder and vacillate. Does that mean that the onus took place after she was a Bogeris? Or does it mean, no, the onus took place when she was a Bogeris, she was raped as an, and when she was a Nara, excuse me. She was raped as a Nara, just that there was no Hamada Bedin, there was no claim in the courts until after she already reached 12 and a half years old. And now the question is, who's going to claim the Knas? And the answer is that she'll claim the Knas.
There's a machloket, whether it's actually Hamada Bedin or collection, right?
Correct, but everybody agrees that the onus took place when she was a Nara.
Right.
If the onus took place when she was a Bogeres, she's past 12 and a half, there is no Knas. So in terms of that other polar extreme, situations where there is no Knas, when we say if she's not a Nara, it means she's a Bogeres. Number two, it means that she's not a Basula. If she's not a Basula, there's no Knas. And number three, even if she's a Nara and a Basula, according to Yossi Aglili, if she was already Mureses, then there is no Knas once she was married. Hello, Meata, says the Gemara, if Rabbi Akiva is going to be consistent, then every time the Torah adds a condition, he's going to say, well, that's only a condition in terms of the father's rights to collect the Knas. And if that condition is not met, then she steps into his feet, into his shoes, and she collects the Knas. Elameata, according to you, Rabbi Akiva, when we say Nara Velo Bogeres, right, when we say that the Torah requires that she be a Nara for this whole parasha, this whole enterprise of an onus to take place, and the Knas to be paid, and we exclude a Bogeres, Hachinami, what we should say is Dili Atzma, that if she was a Bogeres and the rape took place when she was already 12 and a half years old, then she should be collecting the Knas for herself. Or for example, when the Torah adds the condition Besula, that she's never had a relationship before, Velo Ba'ula, to exclude a case where she was already Nivelis. Hachinami, Hachinami means we should be consistent. According to Rabbi Akiva's logic, Dili Atzma, that now that she's a Ba'ula, if she was raped as a Ba'ula, she should collect the Knas herself. In other words, Rabbi Akiva, if you're telling me that every single descriptive phrase that appears in the parasha is only setting up a condition as to who collects the Knas, does the father have rights to collect the Knas if these conditions are met, or does the Knas fall back on her rights as a Nara? Well, then we should apply that not just to the case of Ashalo or Rasa, but also to the cases of Nara and Besula. And we're going to rewrite the whole script of the Torah now. Watch what goes on here. Any girl that's raped, she could be a Be'ula, she could be a Bogeres, we don't care what age she always collects a Knas. I mean, basically you're taking all the parasha with all its elements and you're ripping it to shreds. You know, this is very rare, my friends, and when you see a Gemara that goes so far out on a limb, Ella, so the Gemara says we can't just completely rip out the whole parasha. Legamre, it must mean that when the Torah sets up these conditions of Nara and Besula, legamre. Legamre means as far as the Ikar Knas, as far as the very fundamental question, is there a Knas or is there not a Knas? Is Hachinami, if that be the case, let's be consistent. Let's apply that to the principle of Asher Lo Rasa, that what the Torah had in mind is that she was never married, but if she was married, legamre, there's no Knas at all. So the word legamre here means no Knas at all. And Rabbi Akiva is saying, no, the Knas is not going to go to the father, it's going to go to her, but there is a Knas. Omar Lecha, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva will respond, hi, this pasuk, Asher Lo Rasa, should be taken out of context. If we leave it in context, then the Torah says Nara, Besula, Asher Lo Rasa. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili is absolutely correct that just like Nara and Besula are absolute conditions, so too Asher Lo Rasa is an absolute condition. No. Rabbi Akiva says take the words Asher Lo Rasa and take them out of context. Now, what does it mean to take them out of context? So let me give a little bit of an introduction to the Braisa that we're about to learn. What we have to know is that when we take two parshiyos in the Torah, one is in Mishpatim, that's called Mefate, which means that instead of a rape, she was seduced and she agreed, consented to have this relationship. And number two, the parshiyos Ki Tetzeh of a rape situation of Ones, we find that each one of these two parshiyos respectively, is missing another an element, a piece of the puzzle, if I could use that phrase. So, for example, in the case of the Parashat Mishpatim of Mefata, we know which coin has to be paid. We don't know how many coins, but the coin itself, it says Kesef Yishkol, Kimar Absulus, and Yishkol means Shkolim. Because there are many different kinds of coins, even back in the time of the Torah. One of them is called a shekel. Not to be confused with the Israeli shekel today. There are other coins, there's sloim and the other matbeos and so forth and so on. So the Torah in Parashas Mefata spells out that it's got to be shkola. The Torah in Parashas Ki Tetzeh and Ma'anes, in the rape case, doesn't tell us what the coin is. It's totally ambiguous, or shall I say, totally open-ended. But the Torah tells me how many coins he has to pay, namely what? 50, right? That's the magic number, 50. So I need some sort of a bridge that'll connect Mefata with Ones in both directions. Meaning that Mefata could tell something, can shed a light on Ones, and that Ones can shed a light on Mefata. And that's what Rabbi Akiva is going to derive from the words Asher Lo Orasa. So the words Asher Lo Orasa are going to play a very unique role here in Rabbi Akiva's worldview. And it shouldn't be taken in context as setting up a condition that you're only going to pay for a knas in the case of Lo Orasa. There will be a knas even in the case of Orasa. Again, the knas is not going to go to him, maybe. Maybe it's going to her. We'll have to see. But rather, the Pasuk Asher Lo Rasa is going to be used for a Gzeirah Shavah. Now, what's a Gzeirah Shavah? Gzeirah Shavah means that if you have the same words in two different parashios in the Torah, then the Torah is indicating that we should bridge those two parashios, equate them, and derive conclusions one from the other. So let's go through the Braisa now, Kidisanya. Miboile, he needs it, Lekidisanya. Meaning he needs the Pasuk Asher Lo Rasa for what the Braisa is going to spell out in his name, in the name of Rabbi Akiva. But first the Braisa starts with Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Asher Lo Rasa, what does the Torah mean when it says that she was not married off? Prat, this is coming to exclude the case of Narish and his Arisov and his Garsha, She'en Lo Knas, Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Now this Rabbi Yossi Aglili is an exact twin to Rabbi Yossi Aglili in our Mishnah. There's not a hair's breadth of a difference. It's word for word the same Rabbi Yossi Aglili. I would not need this braisa if I was trying to clarify the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, because that opinion is crystal clear in our Mishnah, that once she was married off, she's out of the parasha of Knas. Why? Because the Torah says, Asher Lo Orasa, that she was never married. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Yesh lo knas, uknasa li'aviha. Please note, this is not Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. Now, I'm not telling you there were two Rabbi Akivas. What I'm telling you is that there were two versions of Rabbi Akiva. We have the version of Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah, and an alternative version of Rabbi Akiva in this Braisa. According to Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, nothing changes when she was married off. Everything remains the same. She is still in the rishus of her father, despite the fact that he used his opportunity to marry her off. But he married her off with Erisin, and that Erisin never culminated with Nisuin because she was divorced before the Nisuin, before the Chuppah. She goes automatically back into the rishus of the of the father. That's Rabbi Akiva here in the Braisa. So what changed, my friends, as far as Knas with Erisin according to Rabbi Akiva? What changed? Absolutely nothing. Nothing changed at all. The Torah says, Asher lo orasa, I need that for something else. That's going to be the Gzeres Shavah of Rabbi Akiva. Ve'adin nosen, and Rabbi Akiva argues that the logic compels us to draw this conclusion. Why? Hoil sins via via zakai bekesef kidusheha. In other words, Rabbi Akiva lays down the premise that a father could marry off his daughter multiple times. Of course, obviously, between each time that he married off, she received a get. Or alternatively, a husband died, never, right? So every single time that she terminates that marriage, she automatically goes back to the reshus of the father as long as there was no nisuin and as long as she's still a nara. So if those two conditions are met, she's still within the ages of 12 to 12 and a half. Number two, she's still an arusa and not a nesua. She goes back into the father's reshus, and that means he can marry her off. Hoel, since via zakoi, he has rights bekesef kiddushel, which means two things. Number one, he can marry her off, and number two, the money that's given by the makadesh to the miskadeshes is given to the father, and it goes right into his bank account. He pockets that money. Via zakoi bekesef knasa. Then the logical conclusion should be that if she's within, she remains in the domain of her father, he, the father, has rights to collect the knas, the chamishim shkolim of knas in a case of onus. Again, keep in mind, we're only talking after gerushin, because if it's before gerushin, then it's kimle v'derabine, that's a capital crime. Ma kesef kiddusha afal pishin is arsav and is garshal avia, just like in the case of the monies that are given for marriage. Even after the father married her off one occasion, and she was divorced from that marriage, she automatically reverts back into his domain, and he can marry her off a second time, and he pockets the kesef kiddushin is af kesef knasa. So too in the case of knas in an ones situation, af al pishin is arsav and is garsha, even though he married her off, but she was divorced, she goes back into the reshus of the father lavia, and he collects the knas. Now comes the bomb question. But Cain, if that be the case, what is the Torah telling me when it says Asher lo orasa? The Torah explicitly describes her as a girl who is not married. And the answer is, take that pasuk out of context. Mufna means it has no purpose in and of itself. When you read those words are completely superfluous. And once you have something that's mufna, then it becomes fertile ground for what's called a gzera shava. Now we look elsewhere in the Torah and we see if we can find those same words elsewhere, and the Torah is going to tell us a bridge that connects two different parshios and two different halachic sections in the Torah. Lahakish lo veladun heimenu gzera shava. Now, I'm not sure, again, we don't have the time for this today, why the Gemara uses such a complicated language here. Lahakish lo ladun heimenu gzera shava. The Gemara could have just said simply, mufna li gzera shava. Why did the Gemara have to add these words? Lahakish lo veladun heimenu. Perhaps the Gemara wants to clarify, this on a very superficial level, what is the thrust and the purpose of this Gzeres Shavah. The purpose of this Gzeres Shavah is to create an analogy so that we can take A and B and we can derive conclusions one from the other. And what conclusions are we to derive from this Gzeres Shavah? Ne'emar kan in the parasha of Ones, it says Asher lo rasa, v'ne'emar lahalon Asher lo rasa. In the parasha of Mefateh, it also says Asher lo orasa. So those three words appear in both parashios, and that's going to teach us and establish a Gzeres Shavah. What do we derive from this Gzeres Shavah? Lahakish lo veladun heimenu, to equate the two. Makan, just like in the case of Ones, the Torah says that the number that he has to pay in this penalty is chamishim. Again, what coin he has to pay, we don't know. But the Torah says, v'nasan ha'ish ha'shokhev imo l'aviyah naro chamishim kosef. Kosef is a general term that includes many, many different coins, many different matbeos. Is af lahalon, so too in the case of mafateh, chamishim, the mafateh is going to have to pay the exact same amount, 50 Kesef, again, kesef is a very generic term, and we don't know specifically which coin. Oh, mala halonel, let's look in the case of mafata. And in the parasha mafata, the Torah is very outspoken at its shkolim, the exact coin, the currency that we're going to use. And multiplied by 50 is shkolim, afkan, so too in the case of ones. By virtue of this gzeirah shavu, we derive the conclusion that an ones has to pay chamishim shkolim. So again, I'm going to test you. How do we know 50? Took you too long. You know, the buzzer goes off after about 3 seconds. Yeah.
Can you learn this before, though? There was another Zera show that I used for this.
This at the beginning of the Perek, I'm going to learn it from Besula Besula, Nara Nara. But Rabbi Akiva, as the Gemara is going to clarify later, doesn't have that. He needs this Zera show, Shalom Rasa. So again, just to quiz you one more time. How do we know that the number is 50?
Honest.
Excellent. Because in a fact, it doesn't say 50. How do we know it's Shkolim? From a fact, because in onus it doesn't say that it's shkol, and that's the thrust of this gzeirah shava. Once we use asher lo ras as a gzeirah shava, it becomes mufta. Mufta means we take it out of its context; it becomes superfluous for the purpose and the goal of achieving this agenda of an equation between onus and mafata to teach me that it's always going to be 50 shkolim, and that's the nature of the penalty. But asher lo ras should not be understood within its context. The way Rabbi Yossi Aglili would argue that she has to be a girl who was never married off. Once she's married off, she's out of the parasha of Ones, and the whole enterprise of Ones goes down the tubes over the, you know, overboard into the ocean. No, comes along. Rabbi Akiva says, take Asher Lo Arasa out of its context and use it for Gzeirah Shava. The Gemara is not happy. Not happy at all. For Rabbi Akiva, does everybody have the place with two lines up before the bottom of Daf Lamed Chesam and Alf? Rabbi Akiva, my chazis, what gives him the inclination? My chazis means the preference. Did to assume that Asher Lo Rasa, quote unquote, is for Gzeirah Shava? Why not use the word Besula as Gzeirah Shava? Instead, we use the word Besula in the parasha, Lebe'ute Ba'ula, to exclude the entire enterprise of Knas in the case of a Ba'ula, if she was already had before she had a relationship. And now we turn to Daf Lamed Ches Amid Beis. Ema, why don't we suggest the following? And it would be just the opposite of Rabbi Akiva. Besula is Gzeirah Shava, because in both Ones and Mefata, the Torah says Besula. And maybe that gives me the Gzeirah Shava. And instead, Asher Lo Rasa should be understood in its context, kipshuto, in a straightforward way, that she was never married, prior to exclude Narish and Asarsim and Iskarsha. What logically compels Rabbi Akiva to land his Gzeirah Shava on the words Asher Lo Rasa? Why not just land your Gzeirah Shava, build it on the word Besula? And then we're going to take Besula as a mufna out of context, and we're going to assume that enochinami, there's a knas even in the case of a ba'ula. No, that can't be. Besula has to exclude ba'ula. Ashalo Rasa is not going to exclude an arusa, but rather it's for Gzeirah Shava. Why not go the other way around, says the Gemara. Right, in Yiddish we say pufaker, just the opposite. Why not say that Besula is coming from the Gzeirah Shava to teach me chamishim kesef, me chamishim shkolim, and the words Asher Lo Rasa are coming to exclude an arusa, and then Rabbi Yossi Aglili would be a happy camper. But why doesn't Rabbi Akiva entertain that possibility? And the Gemara answers, mistavra, because Rabbi Akiva is compelled by a certain logic. Mistavra means svara. What's the logic of Rabbi Akiva? Asher Lo Rasa L'Gzeirah Shava. I have a logically compelling reason to choose the words Asher Lo Rasa as the basis for this Gzeirah Shava. And why is that so? Sharei Ani Korei Banara Besula, because all the other conditions that are set by the Torah apply. Okay, she was married off, but she's still a Nara within the ages of 12 to 12 and a half. She's still a Besula. She didn't have any relation because this was just Erisin and there was no Nisuin. So therefore, I have, like, you know, all the reason logically to assume that the fact that she was an Arusa should not in any way exclude Knas, because she's both a Nara and a Besula. All the basic elements are there. So the Gemara says, Adarabba, why don't we say the opposite? Besula L'Gzeirah Shava, because even if she's a Ba'ula, I have two out of the three of the conditions. Why? Shariani Kori Ba Asher Lo Orasa. She's not, number one, she's a Nara. Number two, she was never married off. So, you know, the same way that you want to get two out of three, I can get two out of three by using Besula for the Gzeres Shavit, saying a Ba'ula is included in Knas, even though she's had a relationship in the past, because she has two conditions that are fulfilled. We can check off two boxes, namely she is a Nara, and she's Asher Lo Orasa. She was never married off. So the Gemara defends Rabbi Akiva. Mistavra, Rabbi Akiva is compelled by the following logic: Ha ishtani gufa, ha lo ishtani gufa. When we look at these three conditions, what we find is that two out of the three of the conditions touch on her very essence, so to speak. You know, her stature, her status, her physical being. And if you talk about a ba'ula, once she's already had a relationship, then there's a change in her physical being. She no longer has besulin, so she's not a besula. So that's called ishtani gufa. There's a change in her body. Once there's a change in her body through ba'ula, we can understand that she's excluded from the parasha knas, because the Torah in the parasha knas is describing this woman. But her, the case where she had erisin and then she was divorced, lo ishtani gufa, nothing really changed. So we have to add the word Nara here into the picture, right? Nara tells us about her very status, right? In many, many different ways, in many different halachas, not just in the situation of Knas, but for many issues in halacha, the relevancy of her being a Nara is very significant. And a Basula means Ishlo Shtani Gufa. So again, in this, the Torah sets out three conditions here. Basula, Nara, Basula, and Asher Lo Orasa. So if we have to take one out of the bag and use it for Gzeres Shavah and call it Mufna and take it completely out of context, Rabbi Akiva points his finger at Asher Lo Orasa. Because that Erisin doesn't have any radical change in her status and her personal status.
The first Mishnah of Herod also, though, seems to follow Rabbi Akiva. Because it's referring to people who are married, to women who are married are entitled to Knas. So that would seem to follow Rabbi Akiva.
Let me think about that for a second. Yeah, I think you're right. Let me just double check that. Yeah, I think you're right, okay. I can't disagree with you on that point. But that's not a question, it's a very important observation. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to turn, you know, like in any ping pong game, you know, in any tennis game, now we have to go back to the other court, right? Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Why is Rabbi Yossi Aglili compelled to assume that Asher Lo Orasa Kipshuto, I mean, he takes it in context, sets up the requirement of the fact that she was never married to him. Hai svara minole. What gives him the svara that, you know, we should equate ones and mafata? Because Rabbi Akiva uses Asher Lo Orasa out of context for the Gzeres Shavah to equate ones and mafata. We derive from that chamishim shkolim. But according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, we really don't know Chamishim Shkolim because we use Asher Lo Orasa in context, so we don't have the Gzeres Shavah. Nafka Lei derives it, Midasanya, from a Braisa. And the Braisa is going to set up a different derivation for the halacha of Chamishim Shkolim. And what is that? So in the Parsha Mefateh, not only does it say Shkolim, because it says Kesef Yishkol, which is Miloshen Shkolim, but it also adds two words, Kimoar HaBesulos. And the words of Kimoar HaBesulos are going to teach me Chamishim. You remember we said before that Mefateh tells me what currency he pays, but we don't know how much. It doesn't say Chamishim. So the answer is we're going to derive Chamishim from the words Kimoar HaBesulos. Because Kimoar HaBesulos means a certain set sum for a basula, that a basula collects. Now, what does that set sum? I mean, in the case of Mafata, the parasha doesn't spell out exactly what that set sum is. But the answer is here, we're going to open up the parasha of Ones, and that's the only time that the Torah tells you what's the set sum to pay a basula. And in the case where a man rapes a basula, and she's a nara, he pays chamishim 50 kesef. So the Torah tells us that mora basulos is 50 kesef. And again, in the parasha of Shkolim, it's in the parasha, excuse me, of Mafat, it says Shkolim. Mora basulos kazeh. Now, since there's a phrase called kemora basulos that appears in both parashios, therefore we're going to assume that both Ones and Mafata have to pay chamishim kesef. Now the Gemara comes back to equate, or I should say to compare and contrast Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa with Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Kasha the Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbi Akiva. Whereas Rabbi Akiva in that Mishnah goes on record as saying that the knas is paid to the Nara herself after she was married once. Rabbi Akiva the Braisa says nothing changes, and even after she was married, the father collects the knas. And the Gemara answers, Trei Tanoi Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. There were two Tanoim at the time of the Mishnah, and each one had his own version of what Rabbi Akiva said. So we now all told have three shittos in the case of Nisarsav and Nisgash. According to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, Nisarsav and Nisgash, there's no knas. According to Rabbi Akiva, now Mishnah, there is knas in Nisarsav and Nisgash, but it goes to her and not to her father. According to Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, in the case of Nisarsav and Nisgash, he, the father, collects the knas, and nothing has changed. Bishlema, the Gemara says, I understand well, Rabbi Akiva de Masnisin. Rabbi Akiva, that Mishnah makes sense that she herself should collect the knas. Lo asya gzereshava umafkale lekra mipashte legami. That's a very heavy, long, complicated Aramaic sentence. Let's take it apart piece by piece. There's something called pashte. Pashte means the simple understanding of the pasuk. Likra means the pasuk, the verse itself. So likra mi pashte. We don't want to upset the simple meaning of the pasuk. Now, in some sense, the pasuk is requiring, as far as knas, that she be asher lo arasa. It's very fine and dandy that you're going to use it for gzeiras shava and derive other conclusions like 50 kesef and 50 shkol, the whole nine yards. But that doesn't mean that we can't read the pasuk. Give me some way of reading the pasuk. What is the Torah coming to tell me about Ones in terms of Knas by adding the words Asher Lo Arasa? Let's understand those words in context, and then we'll use it for Gzeirah Shava. So that's called Lo Asya doesn't come, Gzeirah Shava, Umafka, and to remove it, lay from Likra Mi Pashtei Legamer. You can't totally remove it from its simple meaning. There's got to be some meaning, in modern Hebrew we'd say Mashma'ut, some significance to the words Asher Lo Arasa within the context of the Knas. And the answer is the Torah is changing one of the rules of Knas. What happens to the Knas in a normal case? If she was never married, who gets the Knas? The father gets the Knas. But in this case, says Rabbi Akiva at Mishnah, that it was Arasa, then something changes. And instead of the father collecting the Knas, she collects the Knas. El Rabbi Akiva de Braisa, but if you're going with Rabbi Akiva and the Braisa, is Asya Gzereshavu Mafke Mipashte Legamre? Does the Gzereshavu completely remove it? It uproots the words of the verse from Pashte, from its simple meaning, Legamri, totally. It has nothing to, no light to shed at all on the parish of Knas. Amar Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchok comes to defend Rabbi Akiva and the Braisa, Kari Bey, we should read the Pasuk, Asher Lo Arusa, meaning that she's not an Arusa now. This touches on what Chaim asked me before. Does the word Arusa mean she was never Mu'ureses, or does it mean that now she's not Mu'ureses? He says, if you change the vowels, then you read it as Asher Lo Arusa, that right now she's not an Arusa. Because if she's an Arusa now, what's her status, Rabosai? She's a full-fledged Eishes Ish, and if a man has a relationship with her, the rapist here, he would be put to death. So the Gemara says, why would you read it Asher lo arusa? Arusa baskila. If he had this rape situation with a woman who's an arusa, then he gets skila, and she gets skila. In such a case, we apply the principle of kimlev d'rabamine, which means that you can't give a punishment of knas in a case where somebody is liable for the death penalty. And that's derived, if you remember, from the pasuk v'lo yasod. So why would I need a pasuk here of ashelo arusa to exclude knas in the case of an arusa? Of course there's no knas in the case of an arusa, because he's chayav misa for having a relationship with a married woman. That's not the parsha of knas. So the answer is no. I don't know exactly how to apply and when to apply kim leib d'rabamine. What is the scope? Salka d'aitachamina, I would have thought ho'il sit v'chidush u'shechid shetor b'knas. Knas is something that's a big chidush, right? This was rabba that we learned earlier in the parak. Knas completely defies all the rules and regulations that apply to compensation. There's no compensation here. It's a special penalty. And it's a penalty for the criminal act. Is I might think the Afan Gav de Miktal, even though we're going to put him to death, Mishalim, he still has to pay these knas. Again, why does he have to pay these knas? He's not compensating her. There are other means of compensation. What are those called, Rabosai?
Mamon.
Boshes u pagam mamon, right? That's boshes u pagam mamon. So that he'll pay, right? That's irrelevant. He won't pay because the kibbutz rami. That's what I meant. But as far as knas is concerned, that's a penalty that has nothing to do with compensation. And we might think that since the Torah is machadish, he has to pay to suffer this penalty. Then, in addition to being chayav misa, he's got to pay the penalty. And therefore, I need the pasuk asher lo arusa to teach me that kim leib d'rabamine applies in this case if she's an arusa, even though it's a knas. But that's not going to work out for Rabba. Ula Rabba Dioma. Rabba was the one who said back on, where was it, Lamed Hey, that chidush hu shechidsha Torah b'knas. The afagav de mishad, afagav de miktol mishalim. Rabbi says that the principle of kimleib and the rabbi in a tanakov tashlumim moment only applies in moment. It doesn't apply to knas. Is ma'ikal emema? How could you square with Rabbi Akiva the brisa? Because the pasuk says asher lo arusa, and the principle is that we don't take gzeiras shavah to completely undermine the pshat in the pasuk. So we use the pshat in the pasuk to tell me that there will be kim leib d'rabamine even though it's a knas. But Rabbah holds that there is no kim leib d'rabamine in the case of a knas. And the Gemara answers sovelok Rabbi Akiva de Masnisin. This is the old matching game, right? So we're going to have to match up Rabbah with Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, who says that asher lo arusa is coming to exclude the father from his rights to collect the knas. She will collect the knas herself. So Rabbo says, this is where we're going to stop for today. Let's just make a note of where we got up to. Thank you so much. We're up to Tana Rabbanan Knasa Lemi. And Doc, if you can hang in with us again, you know, I know you probably were at some point a little bit overwhelmed, but you know, this is something that we've been learning for a while. But as I said before, in less than 2 weeks' time, probably in about a week's time, we're going to be starting something brand new. Now, Eric, or anybody, I'm just asking anybody if you have.